This is Melissa. It is the 21st of September, and tomorrow is the first day of autumn, and it's slightly cooler temperatures, and I have been enjoying that. So I hope you're all well. And I would say here at the beginning that it is great to have your support in any way that you can. If you don't have Alan Watts books, you can make your way to the website, cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and you'll find out how to order those and CD discs or all of his talks in flash drive form. And you can also download the talks for free. Doesn't support me, but they're there for you. And I would encourage you to write me, P.O. Box 815, Keene, K-E-E-N-E, Texas 76059. If you just want to say hello or tell me a story about your part of the world, I enjoy hearing from you. If you include an order or donation, you can make the checkout to CTTM within the U.S. There's Stripe within the U.S. There's also Cash App, which is an app that lets you send cash, sort of like cash, you know, the digital version. Cash is fine too. So I appreciate your support. I appreciate those of you who have subscribed to Substack. And a lot of you are free subscribers, and that's good. I'm happy to have you there. I made the 1,000 subscribers last week, and that was fun for me. I haven't been one to pay attention to subscribers or joiners or, you know, people who give thumbs up versus thumbs down, but it was nice. I enjoyed that milestone. So thank you again. Please visit cuttingthroughthematrix.com is the primary place to find out how to access Alan Watts' work, my work, and to support if you are able to. I mentioned last week, I think, that I had started watching an Adam Curtis documentary called Can't Get You Out of My Head. This was done in 2021, actually 2 weeks before Alan passed away. And so I just didn't see it for a long time. Then I noticed that it was out there, but I didn't watch it. So I needed a break from the news cycle within the U.S. and started to watch that. It is in total about 8 hours. It's 6 parts, and I have a little over an hour left to go as I'm just tucking that in as I can. Now, I watched with Alan Watt every single documentary I'm pretty sure that Adam Curtis ever made. And yes, I know he's a company man. He came out of the BBC and he did the journalistic type documentaries for the BBC, and now he's out on his own. His work has a slant, and there's a lot of things that you'll see when you watch enough of it. It's the omission. Okay, that's very interesting what he shared, but he didn't share this. And for instance, of a couple of examples there of this one, there were places where he brought up things that not to talk about the Macy conferences just felt like a huge omission, or not to talk about the Frankfurt School was a major overlook. And you could go on and on with these kinds of things that he makes a fascinating connection, but then fails to tie it together. Nonetheless, I recommend watching it if you have time or you want to split it up and, you know, like I say, 6 parts. He brings up some, he ties together some interesting ideas about the individual versus the collective. And the individual, isolated, fearful, the tendency towards conspiracy thinking, nationalism as a new form of collectivism. And so it's full of thought-provoking ideas. But one thread that runs through it is his citation of the works of various psychologists and psychotherapists and people who study the brain and the biochemistry of the brain or some other aspect of it, our behavior. And remember, Alan Watt would always say, we're the most studied species on the planet. And there are several psychologists or brain researchers that are mentioned here that are worth knowing about. And one that he referenced several times was Daniel Kahneman. And Daniel Kahneman is an American Israeli economist and psychologist and behavioral psychologist with an emphasis on economics. So that's a whole loaded bunch of qualifications there. But Alan and I read a book, and I'm actually not sure, and I didn't take the time to scrounge around and try to see if Alan had ever mentioned this book, but we read a book together by Daniel Kahneman that came out in 2011 called Thinking, Fast and Slow. And fast thinking, according to Daniel Kahneman and his research, is instinctive and emotional. And slow thinking is more deliberative, more logical. So just interesting that there is so much about how we're studied within Adam Curtis's documentaries always, and in this one in particular. Yesterday, I went into the neighboring town and had my hair trimmed. I do that a couple of times a year, I guess, and I was listening to an older talk from Alan, and it was a good talk, and I don't have it on the tip of my head right now when it was. But anyway, Alan was saying, and just don't follow anybody. You got to think for yourself. Don't follow anybody. He said, definitely don't follow me. He said, I get out of bed, I don't comb my hair. I wander around with a mess of hair, and that made me laugh. So at least when I was there, we had each other to trim hair. He would give me a little haircut, and I could do the same for him. And I will say that once he decided to get rid of his long hair at a certain point, it made it much more challenging for me to do that because I'm not really a hair cutter. But anyway, I went into the neighboring town, and my objective was to just pop in somewhere and see if someone had time to trim a bit off my hair. And there was a lovely lady in a shop, and she said, yes, I've got time, come on in. So I sat down, and she asked about me and what I did. And I said, well, I write a bit, and I put out a podcast, and I talk about, I don't know, some history, current events. It's hard to describe, really. And she jumped on that. She said, oh, well, what do you think about the Charlie Kirk story? And so I launched into a bit of talking about how you have to look at everything from a lot of different angles, and that I had tried to do that. I said, I prefer not to spend that much time thinking about it, but, and then I told her some of the things that I had looked into. And she said, thank you for talking to me like I could understand you, and not treating me like a moron, like I'm stupid. And I said, well, of course I would talk to you that way. And she said, well, because when all of this happened, I had no idea who Charlie Kirk was. And I didn't understand what all the fuss was about if I overheard something. And so she said, I've asked a few people, and they look at me like I have two heads. They say, well, what rock have you been living under that you don't know what's going on? And then they proceed to lecture me. And she said, you shared some things, and you didn't make me feel stupid. And I laughed, and I said, you know, I like you more because you had no idea who Charlie Kirk was. That's a plus in my book. But I was thinking about the efforts that I have made for myself to understand not so much what happened, because, you know, the official stories, we're not going to know, and people feel very strongly about it one way or the other. So I'm just trying to understand what we're being told and who is telling us. And so one of the things that's being discussed is that, okay, Charlie Kirk was backing away from his strong support of Israel. He wanted to, he didn't like what was going on in Palestine. He didn't like the genocide of the Palestinians. I'm going to keep some comments, snarky and otherwise, to myself. I'm just saying, you know, then there's a story about a billionaire who went to lunch with Charlie Kirk in the Hamptons and basically tried to buy him back over into the Israel camp. And Charlie Kirk, and, you know, so there's this whole story. The billionaire's name is Bill Ackman. And Candace Owens, who we are told is on the right and has a right-leaning point of view, and Tucker Carlson, we're told, is on the right. And they ran with this story. They repeated this. Israel took him out. The Mossad took him out. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the IDF, the Mossad, Israel, they're capable of anything. So, but you want to look at things from, like I said, every possible angle that you can. And near as I can put together, that story is coming from a journalist by the name of Max Blumenthal. And Max Blumenthal, he has ties to Russia. I don't think that that's, I think that's kind of mainstream thinking. He's certainly worked for a lot of outlets like RT, and he's been accused of having a pro-Russia bias. He's, and, you know, coming from a left point of view, neither here nor that, just something to, you know, put into the little drawer of this is what I know. Well, Max Blumenthal's father is Sidney Blumenthal. Sidney Blumenthal comes also from what you would call left journalism. He's written for all the big papers in the U.S. He's written for The Guardian in the U.K., which is definitely, you know, leaning towards the left. And Sidney Blumenthal, Max's father, was an employee of the Clinton Foundation for some time. He was a key advisor to Bill Clinton and then Hillary Clinton. So again, it's just something to put in the drawer of what do I know. Here is Max Blumenthal, who is seeding a story about how a billionaire approached Charlie Kirk, wanted to bring him over to the side of Israel again, as if, I mean, what we're being told is he had moved away. And then, okay, so the billionaire denies this, but the story has been seeded. It's like the didn't happen, that all of the elements, the images that if we were unlucky enough to see these images, the way the mic was held, the entry and exit wounds, the coloration of the hands in the casket, the, you know, widow, was she sincere, was she not sincere? All of this is, I call it seeded, but all that we have access to is because it has been decided that we will have access to it. That's the point that I'm trying to make. So sleuthing, and I do this, but sleuthing has to be entered into knowing that you're sifting through clues and so-called evidence that has been put there for you. So a question that we might ask ourselves, is any particular story worth that? Does anything that is out there, that is put out there for us to think about, what relevance does it have to your life? What do you think it will change if you know more about it? How do you think it will affect you? Those are just some things that I thought about you know, in thinking of it. There was one writer, I believe they're English, and I had read a piece that they wrote. There was a statement that kind of annoyed me. They wrote, "Anyone who believes that Charlie Kirk was actually murdered is coming from an emotional place. They're not logical." And it annoyed me to read that, and I didn't feel emotional about it. But my question is, how do we know? How do we know anything? The idea that it didn't happen, and that we can know that by the evidence that we can see for ourselves with our own eyes, is something that I've just explained to you, but for myself too, is that it's all put out there. And so it's bloody well hard to figure out, to steal a term from the English, what is actually happening if, again, we bother to look at it. But this writer went to great length to say how logical they were, how rational, how unemotional, and they even went on to talk about their star sign as evidence of their logical place that they were coming from. And I'm going to say something about left brain versus right brain, because emotions are good, and having emotional responses to anything is helpful, as long as the emotions aren't controlling us. It's that balance, it's the left and the right that we're looking at integrating, because we actually learn from our emotions and from having those properly integrated into our thinking. We have, besides just pure emotion, there is a part of our mind that is intuitive, that is non-rational, that plays into how we process information. And the woman who trimmed my hair even talked about the fact that she comes often from, you know, just having strong intuition about people, things, events, and so forth. And that is a good thing. If I have time here, I'm going to play a little clip of a conversation between Jordan Peterson and Ian McGilchrist. And I didn't pull up the name of his book. It's the left-right hemispheres. And I've discussed this before. I think Alan may have mentioned the book, but I have talked about and written about it even recently, the idea that what we're trying to do, what Alan was showing in the Cutting Through volumes, he was demonstrating non-linear thinking. The books were written non-linearly, and the mind really does work differently when you are not thinking in a linear fashion, and you're allowing different parts of your brain and other senses, even beyond the five, to work.
But what is fascinating is that the right hemisphere, as I say, knows that there are things that it's not aware of. But the left hemisphere seems to take the attitude that if it's not attending to it, it doesn't exist. This is very dramatic in clinical neurology. So people who've had a right hemisphere stroke, they not only, as it were, don't now pay attention to something, but they deny that that thing ever existed. There's wonderful, very rich accounts of patients. One of the ones that I really like is an experiment done by, who was it? Bisiak and Luzzatti, I think, back in the late 1970s. Where they got a couple of highly educated people with right hemisphere strokes. And it was in Milan at the time. And they said, you know, these people lived in Milan. And they said, imagine you're standing in the Piazza del Duomo in front of the cathedral and looking at the square. Describe all the buildings in the square. And they would describe only the ones on the right side that the left hemisphere only pays attention to. Whereas, you know, but I need to say for the viewers, that the right hemisphere pays attention to both halves of the world. So when you have a a left hemisphere stroke, the world is relatively preserved globally. But after a right hemisphere stroke, you're only relying on this left hemisphere. It's interested in the bit of space which it can manipulate, the bit on the right. So they named the buildings down the right-hand side of the view of the square they had then. And then the experimenters asked them to go to the other end of the square and look at the cathedral facade and name the buildings. And this time they named all the ones down the other side of the square, but didn't mention any of the ones they just mentioned. So there's something, it's been commented by one philosopher, that it's almost like there's an ontological landslide. Things come in and out of existence for the left hemisphere. And when it was pointed out to these people what they'd missed, they became angry, irritable, and frustrated, which is a typical left hemisphere emotional timbre. Impatient to dismiss this. So I think that's intriguing. I mean, it's just one image. I mean, the very dramatic one is to do with denying that you have parts of the body. And as was pointed out by Fritz Langele, I think, way back in the second decade of the 20th century, they don't only deny after a right hemisphere stroke that they have the left half of the body, which is not functioning because of the right hemisphere stroke. They will become very irritable if questions are asked about it, or they will just go blank. I mean, they will be talking perfectly coherently, and then they're asked about that, and they will go stumm, or they will become very irritated. And if you force them to recognize that they have a body on that side, although they're perfectly intelligent people, and they know they must always have had a left half of their body, they will deny it. And he says it's as though they never had a left half of the body. It's not only that it's not there now, it never was for them and never will be. Now, that's what I mean when I say that there are different levels of creativity of the world, or the creation of the world through attention, I should say, in the two hemispheres.
So just something to put out there. It's one thing that I really enjoy is hearing from people that are all over the world that send emails or that I get to hear. And we had our little book club meeting and we had the presentation for this section, which is the second half of the book. The first two interviews was presented for us by Darren in South Africa. And then we had some exchange back and forth. And last week, I'll just mention Darren by name, he sent me several very interesting and thought-provoking things to look at. And some around Charlie Kirk. Others were, you know, just stories that were going on. Is that this actually came up in the book club discussion, is that, you know, he gets sick being in South Africa. He just gets sick every time he turns on the radio or is trying to take in information. All of the stories are about America, what's going on in America, American politics and so forth. And I hear a similar kind of thing from other people. And he said, you know, what about, just to give us something else to think about, he said, what about Israel's escalation, their escalation of the ground war in Gaza? What about the discussion that the Gulf Arab states should be uniting for their defense, kind of a NATO for the Gulf states? What about the fact that Germany has lost, you know, something like 150,000, 160,000, or by, you know, industrial jobs in the last year, 50,000 in automotive alone? What about the BRAIN initiative? He tossed a few things out there. This is the brain research through advancing innovative neurotechnologies. I think this was set up under in 2013. This was Francis Collins. Francis Collins came up in a piece that G. Tartan Tinker guest wrote for the Substack, CTTM Substack, just the other day about CRISPR technologies. And so I'll link to that and that you can take a look at. I bring that up because the redux that I am playing for you, it's from May 6, 2011, entitled Put a Firewall Around Your Mind. Alan Watt read some from a military paper. This is from the U.S. Army War College Quarterly called Parameters. It's from the spring of 1998, The Mind Has No Firewall by Timothy L. Thomas. And Alan read parts of this. It's only 7 pages long, and it is well worth reading. So you can take something that was written then in 1998, and you know I've put up some things from James Giordano talking about where the military is in terms of, you know, their access to our brain. And there is a lot of really good information in this. And he also cited another Parameters U.S. Army War College document that he read from several times over the years called Constant Conflict. And the two go together quite well, which is why he often paired them together. Constant Conflict is saying, you know, hey, perpetual war. And that's what this is about. So we have to look at who is saying what. If you've got the Blumenthal, Chris Hedges, the left camp, and then you've got, and they're saying, you know, Zionism bad, and, you know, Israel bad, but they've got their own agenda that they're pushing. It's what is still being created is constant conflict. So we are at war somewhere, but as Alan was reminding us, all of these things, all of this weaponry, and it's right there to see, is aimed at us. So psychotronic war is mentioned in The Mind Has No Firewall, and they're talking about, oh, where the Russians are in this. Well, talk about warfare on the mind. If you just do a little digging, you know, one of the questions that I asked myself was, what does the Council on Foreign Relations have to say about Charlie Kirk? And sure enough, a big thinker for this, the senior fellow, Bruce Hoffman, the senior fellow for counterterrorism and homeland security, was the first official CFR voice to weigh in. And he is the co-author of a book, Gods, Guns, and Sedition, Far-Right Terrorism in America. So I'll link to this. I'll link to a conversation that he had with a Canadian journalist on the CBC on the 16th of this month. Because, like I said last week, what is more interesting than who did this and or did it even happen? The interesting question is, what do they want us to think? What are we supposed to be concerned about with? Are we supposed to be wringing our hands over the temporary laying off of a comedian when all you have to do is scratch the surface of that story? And we see that there's a big deal going down for Disney. And, you know, so this is a good, or we see that the FCC's got its own, the Federal Communications Commission has its own agenda at the moment. When I went to get my hair cut yesterday, I pulled out and my neighbor was pulling out of her driveway just ahead of me in her pickup truck. And I slowed down and then stopped to allow her to pull out of her driveway onto the street, which allowed me to see that on the back windshield of her pickup truck, she had written there, I am Charlie Kirk. So I thought, oh, okay, well, there's the meme. That's the meme that we're all supposed to, you know, be aware of. The reason why I don't just jump on the didn't happen bandwagon or need to spend a lot of time dissecting a particular event as a possible example of a psyop is because we live in a constant psyop. We are under psychological operations warfare all the time. And I don't have time. I had some very interesting emails from listeners. I wish I had more time to share it. I may just try to mention a couple of concepts that came from some of these mails. Somebody said, What happens with these events is the Christification of the victim. And I thought that that was a good way of putting it, that someone is held up, the martyr status, and then they are then lifted up and venerated, and then all manner of things. So is this free speech? Is it gun rights? Is it a further division of the left versus the right? There's so much going on. One thing that is interesting, and if you do listen to the conversation that Hoffman from the CFR had with the CBC radio journalist, he mentions Nick Fuentes and the far right. So it's, you know, we've got the vilification of the left by the right. And all of the sudden, remember, shooters used to be neo-Nazis, but now all of the sudden shooters are trannies. So it's just, it's psychological operations, and it is nonstop. When I first got to Canada, Alan asked if I could make a meat pie. Well, I don't really know what a meat pie is. It's not an American thing. I mean, we had chicken pot pie, but I said, what is a meat pie? And he said, oh, steak pie or steak and kidney. And so I read a couple of recipes, and I thought, okay, I'll do this. I can make pie crust. So I made a steak pie. And he, before I started, he said the crust, it should be tender and flaky. And so I made a meat pie with a tender and flaky crust. And so I was waiting for his reaction, and I said, well, how is that? And he said, it's good, it's delicious, but it's not that flaky crust that I remember that I want. And I said, well, it's a flaky crust. And he said, yes, but the crust that I grew up eating, the crust that I remember on the meat pies, they had layers, like the crust had layers. I said, oh, you're looking for puff pastry. And he said, I don't know, I'm just looking, you know, the layers, the flaky layers. I said, oh, okay, well, I can do puff pastry. Now, that's a whole different thing, and it's actually more involved, but it's not the hardest thing in the world to do. But a puff pastry, it's a French pastry. So you take a lot of butter, and you've got the dough, and then you roll it out into a rectangle, and you fold the rectangle over, and then you roll it out again, and then you fold the rectangle over, and you roll it out again. Okay, so the basic one is six single folds. They call them a letter fold. And that then makes 36 layers by the time it has been folded that many times. So you've got the 36 layers, but it creates quite a few hundred. I think the number I wrote it down is 729 layers of butter and 730 layers of dough. And what happens in the baking process is that the water in the dough creates steam, and as the butter melts and then cooks, it becomes crispy. So that is how a puff pastry is made. And I was thinking yesterday that trying to dissect or reverse engineer a particular PSYOP event, or what we might believe to be a PSYOP event, is like trying to take the puff pastry and unbake it and return all of those layers that, what are we up to now, like 1,500 layers of butter and dough in 36 layers of distinct dough, and return that to a pile of flour and a pile of butter and some water. Because we don't know. All you have to do is go on your computer and put your VPN, set your VPN to Sweden or Miami or London or Nice, somewhere in South Africa or Australia, and you will be returned with very different kinds of articles and even queries to the same question. This is how it works. We are kept in our little bubble, and we just, you know, personally, I think it takes a person who is a little more confident than I am to want to separate the puff pastry back into its components and say, I know exactly how this was done and who did it. So I'm going to link to a few things from Chatham House. Israel's attack on Qatar shows why it's time for a Gulf Defense Union. I'm going to link, of course, to the Army War College papers on The Mind Has No Firewall and Constant Conflict. And I am also going to give you a few updates from the Brain Initiative. I will link to the interview called The Return of Political Violence. That is Hoffman from the CFR talking to the CBC and a few other things there too. In my quest to find out as much as I could about what we are supposed to see or think about this, I found the work of a channel on YouTube called GFL Station, and it has a fair amount of subscribers. And they channel, evidently, they have star seeds. I think they're called Arcturian and Pleiadian. I'm not sure how that works, but someone named Dave Akira channeled Zorion of Sirius. And the questioner asked, what do you make of the Charlie Kirk shooting? And Zorion of Sirius, the Syrian High Council up in outer space, said, well, he's got an hour and 40 minutes of channeled talk. And so I can tell I didn't listen to it all. I didn't listen to very much of it. I just listened to a few minutes. But there were some good comments there. It said, this is a spiritual war, and only shining more light and love on this darkness will change hearts and minds. Thank you for this great reminder to hold the space of love. And lots of similar comments there. Thank you, Zorian, and all of our star family for your help at this exciting cosmic moment. Somebody said, oh my God, this is the answer. Retaliating is totally the opposite of what Charlie Kirk preached. Justice is what we want, and we will not get it through more separation and violence. A truly beautiful and spot-on message. Maybe I should listen to more than 5 minutes of it. Today's Redux, May 6, 2011. Put a firewall around your mind. Psychological warfare and psychotronic weapons. Powers of angels from hell or from the heavens. Weaponized data can blow your cells apart, cause disorientation or arrhythmia of the heart. PSYOPs operations find its easiest delivery is info with scary music leaving you in misery. Like the squawks from Psycho, your mind can't exclude. The audio plus visual creates terrifying mood. Fear-driven news to paralyze your feet uses music so perfectly your heart will match the beat. It hits your nervous system, turns on fight or flight. Sells panic commodities, leaves wallet slim and light. It's a jungle out there. Don't get in a bind. By PSYOPs, technotronics, put a firewall around your mind. Thank you so much. You take care and have a good week.
There's a code of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence, and it can't go on.
Hi, folks. I am Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 6th of May, 2011. Newcomers should look into the website cuttingthroughthematrix.com. You'll find hundreds of audios for download and peruse them at your leisure. Hopefully, you'll find that I've given you shortcuts to understanding this massive, complex superstructure of a system which rises way above and encompasses everything to do with government, way beyond government. You tell governments what to do. A system that's been in place for an awful long time. It has the future planned as it planned the recent past, your parents' past, and so on. We've all lived through parts of ongoing agendas. So help yourself to these audios and you'll find out how it's done. Just as we've been programmed today to look forward to a different kind of future, a planned future too. They're telling you what kind of future is going to be. They have been for years with austerity and the greening movements and all the rest of it. They're telling you what kind of future you're moving into. And then you can add on to Agenda 21 from the United Nations and all the other sustainability programs. And you'll find out you're going back to the old feudal village system. They always tell you where they're taking you. It's just most folk can't tie it all together and see it's a deliberate design by those who control the world. It's controlled basically through money, and money buys governments, and money buys their armies too. It's very simple. Lots of think tanks involved. So help yourself to the audios. Remember, all the sites listed on the com site have transcripts for download and print up too. Of a lot of talks I've given, not all of them, but a lot of them. And you can also get transcripts in other languages in alanwattsentinel.eu. Help yourself to the variety offered. Remember, too, you're the audience that bring me to you. I don't push any particular products to save your lives under any circumstances or catastrophe. And hopefully you can keep me going by supporting me. You can buy the books and discs I have for sale. Remember, straight donations are certainly really appreciated because every time this time of year comes round, all the different things to do with the internet roll around too, all your payments for the sites and so on, all that has to be renewed, and it's a lot of cash to keep all that stuff up there. And then the reason I have so many sites up there is because I kept getting them pulled or broken, or they wouldn't allow me to increase my disk space at Yahoo and so on. So I had to go into other sites at the last minute, and now I've got a whole bunch of them, which I suppose maybe it could be useful in the future too when they start pulling them off. But they'll go for them all, I think, when they eventually start pulling them off through some strange ubiquitous law, which will come, of course. But as I say, on this particular broadcast, I try and show you the system as it is, and even show you sometimes how when you think you're fighting the system, sometimes you're actually being sucked into it through other means. You can be disabled, remember, through fear, and fear is a psychological operation technique, and it's well understood. They've been using it in horror movies for years, and you don't even know it. The techniques are very simple. Because they stimulate the amygdala in the brain. And the amygdala really will respond to watching a horror movie. And because you identify with the heroes, will they escape? Will they be killed by this awful monster? And you'll hear the driving music that really puts you into a fight or flight syndrome. And that can be used as a method of propaganda too. And it is. So be very, very careful who you allow into your brain. Because you want to be in control of it yourself, I would hope. That's what I try to do on this particular broadcast. Back with more after this break.
This is the Oaks, a house in the country which I rented for the summer.
Hi, folks. We're cutting through the matrix, and last night I talked about constant conflict. From the Army War College quarterly, and they basically gave you a good part of the agenda there. You tie it in, of course, with the New American Century group, a private group. Many of them were involved in actually in politics, and some of them became high members of the U.S. government, of course, and they had it drafted out in the early 90s, and then they reiterated in about 97 that their agenda was to take out all these countries, which are now being taken out across the Middle East and elsewhere. And they wanted to start with Afghanistan, then Iraq, and then perhaps Iran. They weren't sure it was Iran next, or Libya, and so on. and eventually Syria after Egypt. So you find this was all planned this way. You have to, if you don't understand the New American Century and you haven't got the patience to look it up, well, tough luck on you, because you'll never really understand what this is all about. It's all about an old agenda, very old agenda. And of course, the groups of the New American Century are also members of trilateral commissions, Council on Foreign Relations Commission, and the Royal Institute of International Affairs, because Carol Quigley, the historian for this group, for the Council on Foreign Relations in America, the American branch of it, admitted himself that the US, for instance, and Britain hadn't elected an independent prime minister or president since the late 1800s. They all belonged to this group that believed that they, with their superior culture, etc., had the right to rule the world, to basically rule the world and force a common culture across it. So you're going through this particular phase right now. And as I say, that tied in with the article last night, because of course you must have the higher echelons of the military involved in all of this to understand what's happening. They must be involved in that psychological operations and intelligence is way above the normal field intelligence officer. They have degreed systems, much like the CIA too, all compartmentalized right up to the top ones. And you're going through, as I say, the takedown, the standardization of the world. But it's not to be like, rah, rah, we win, not in the least. They're also waging war at the peoples back home as well, because they don't look upon the peasant of the Middle East any more differently from the peasant of the USA, Canada, or Britain, or China, for that matter. So you've got to get that through sometimes our thick skulls. And talking about thick skulls, tonight I'm going to touch on an article I also read out some time back. And it was also from the U.S. Army War College, because it ties in with what's happening to all of us today, again, as did last night's particular talk. And it ties in as well from another talk I gave, and I put up a link to it on February the 14th on CNN video on microwave and plasma weaponry. But it also touched on very low frequency weaponry and high frequency weaponry to do with the human brain. They were already well into that back in the 80s. This is 1985. So I'll put that link up tonight because it ties in with tonight's talk. And this is from the Army War College again. It's 1998, pages 84 to 92. And it says here, that the human body, much like a computer, remember this, I'll put this up tonight for the link, you can look it up for yourself at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. The human body, much like a computer, contains myriad data processors. They include, but not are limited to, the chemical electrical activity of the brain, the heart, peripheral nervous system, the signals sent from the cortex region of the brain to other parts of our body, the tiny hair cells in the inner ear that process auditory signals, and the light-sensitive retina and cornea of the eye that process visual activity. We're on the threshold of an era in which these data processors of the human body may be manipulated or debilitated. Examples of unplanned attacks on the body's data processing capability are well documented. So they can do it, you understand? And they've been doing it for a long time. And they say that strobe lights have been known to cause epileptic seizures. That's very old information. Not long ago in Japan, children watching television cartoons were subjected to pulsating lights that caused seizures in some and made others very sick. That was a psychological operation that was admitted later too. Defending friendly and targeting an adversary, data processing capabilities of the body appears to be an area of weakness in the US approach to information warfare theory, a theory orientated heavily towards systems data processing and designed to attain information dominance on the battlefield. And then he goes on to say this, or so it would appear from information in the open, unclassified press. See, they sneer at the unclassified press because, you see, unclassified press takes their info from these guys, and that's how you get your indoctrination. It all goes through a central processing for all, including Reuters. They're all working together. This U.S. Shortcoming may be a serious one, and it's not a shortcoming either. That's a lie. They always, it's just like the missile crisis. Oh, we don't have enough missiles, or not big enough ones, and the Russians have got better ones, and all that nonsense. As they sucked up all your tax money and used them for other purposes, like this particular purpose here. Anyway, it says a U.S. shortcoming may be a serious one since the capabilities to alter the data processing systems of the body already exist. A recent edition of the U.S. News and World Report highlighted several of these wonder weapons, such as acoustics, microwaves, lasers, and noted that scientists are searching the electromagnetic and sonic spectrums for wavelengths that can affect human behavior. That's what Brzezinski was talking about years before this particular article, when he was up there with the NSA, and he talks about psychotronic warfare. So a recent Russian military article offered a slightly different slant to the problem, declaring that humanity stands on the brink of a psychotronic war, with the mind and body as the focus. That article discussed Russian and international attempts to control the psychophysical condition of man and his decision-making processes by the use of VHF generators, noiseless cassettes, and other technologies. Some of that, as I say, is in the links from CNN, and I'll put them up again tonight. Done in the 80s. Old stuff. They didn't make this stuff to stand and admire it and say, my God, that's pretty. I mean, they make this stuff to use, you understand? An entirely new arsenal of weapons based on devices designed to introduce subliminal messages to alter the body's psychological and data processing capabilities might be used to incapacitate individuals. These weapons aim to control or alter the psyche or to attack the various sensory and data processing systems of the human organism. That's all you are now, is a human organism. In both cases, the goal is to confuse or destroy the signals that normally keep the body in equilibrium. This article examines energy-based weapons, psychotronic weapons, and other developments designed to alter the ability of the human body to process stimuli. One consequence of this assessment is that the way we commonly use the term information warfare, and it falls short when the individual soldier, not his equipment, becomes the target of attack. Information warfare theory and the data processing elements of humans. In the U.S., the common conception of information warfare focuses primarily on the capabilities of hardware systems such as computers, satellites, and military equipment, which process data in various forms. According to Department of Defense Directive S3600.1 of December 9, 1996, information warfare is defined as an information operation conducted during times of crisis or conflict to achieve or promote specific objectives over a specific adversary or adversaries. That can also be the domestic population, remember. An information operation is designed in the same directive as actions taken to affect adversary information and information systems while defending one's own information and information systems. These information systems lie at the heart of the modernization effort of the U.S. Armed Forces and other countries, and manifest themselves as hardware, software, communications capabilities, and highly trained individuals. Recently, the U.S. Army conducted a mock battle that tested these systems under simulated combat conditions. U.S. Army Field Manual 10151, Operational Terms and Graphics, released 30 September 1997, defines information warfare as actions taken to achieve information superiority by affecting information-based processes and information systems while defending one's own information processes and information systems. The same manual defines information operations as continuous military operation within the military information environment that enables, enhances, and protects friendly forces' ability to collect, process, and act on information to achieve an advantage across the full range of military operations. Information operations include interacting with a global information environment and exploiting or denying an adversary's information and decision capabilities. This system's approach to the study of information warfare emphasizes the use of data. You got to remember one thing through all of this particular article. You are the target. You are the target, whether some supposed enemy is going to influence your mind or your government's psyops or ops are going to influence your mind. They're battling over you. Since this system's approach to the study of information warfare emphasizes the use of data, referred to as information, to penetrate an adversary's physical defenses that protect data. in order to obtain operational or strategic advantage. It has tended to ignore the role of the human body as an information or data processor in this quest for dominance, except in those cases where an individual's logic or rationale thought may be upset via information or deception. As a consequence, little attention is directed towards protecting the mind and the body with a firewall, as we have done with hardware systems. Nor have any techniques for doing so been prescribed. Yet the body is capable not only of being deceived, manipulated or misinformed, but also shut down or destroyed, just as any other data processing system. The data the body receives from external sources, such as electromagnetic, vortex or acoustic, and I'll carry on with this, actually. It's a very important article for those who can follow it. Back after this break.
Here's something else. You've heard about the bats they have here. Animal bats, the kind that fly?
Yes, yes.
Look what it says in this magazine. This is a report from the State Health Department, and it says some of them bats is rabid.
Well.
And that ain't all. Now.
Hi, folks. We're back, cutting through the matrix and reading about technologies that do exist, and they're being used, actually. They've been used for many years now and at lower frequencies, but they can certainly step it up and make them more powerful. But this is from the Army War College, and it says here, to do with the body itself, they say they can actually shut down or destroy the body, the human body, just as any other data processing system. Remember, all data, even noise, music, everything is data. The way the pixels are arranged on a screen is data. A lot of it's subconscious too, you don't even notice, but it can actually alter you because it goes into your subconscious. It can actually affect the way that the certain signals are sent to different parts of your brain. It can lower or increase your heart rate, for instance, stuff like that. And they admit that at the Pentagon. They've actually got what they call viruses that put out certain pixels, flashing pixels, clusters together, and with a particular noise, and they can actually deceive the heart. And the signals that get to the heart to make it beat and literally bring on cardiac arrest. This little innocent tool that you bought, because it's your personal computer, right? It's not theirs, it's yours, right? Anyways, it says here just as any other data processing system, the data that the body receives from external sources, such as electromagnetic, vortex, or acoustic energy waves, or creates through its own electrical or chemical stimuli, can be manipulated or changed, just as the data, which is information, in any hardware system can be altered. Now he lies here. The only body-related information warfare element considered by the United States is psychological operations, which is a lie because the U.S. misses nothing to do with weaponry. They put more money into than any other country into all of this stuff. But he has to say that because it's a published article. And it says here, so it's talking about PSYOP operations. In Joint Publication 313.1, for example, PSYOP is listed as one of the elements of command and control warfare. The publication notes that the ultimate target of information warfare is the information-dependent process, whether human or automated. Command and control warfare, C2W, is an application of information warfare in military operations. C2W is the integrated use of PSYOPs, military deception, operation security, electronic warfare, and physical destruction. Not bad, eh, from these little invisible waves that we get. One source defines information as a nano-accidental signal used as an input to a computer or communications system. The human body is a complex communication system constantly receiving non-accidental and accidental signal inputs, both external and internal. If the ultimate target of information warfare is information-dependent process, whether human or automated, then the definition in the joint publication implies that human data processing of internal and external signals can clearly be considered an aspect of information warfare. Foreign researchers have noted the link between humans as data processors. See, they're considering you because you are a processor of data. And the conduct of information warfare. While some study only uses psychological operations link, others go beyond it. As an example of the former, one recent Russian article described offensive information warfare as designed to use the internet channels for the purpose of organizing PSYOPs as well as for early political warning of threats to American interests. The author's assertion was based on the fact that all, listen to this now, all mass media are used for psychological operations. That's exactly what I've been telling you folks. For the harder thinking, I'll repeat that part. The author's assertion was based on the fact that all mass media are used for psychological operations. And today this must include the internet. This must include the internet, it says. The author asserted that the Pentagon wanted to use the internet to reinforce psychological influences during special operations conducted outside the U.S. borders to enlist sympathizers who would accomplish many of the tasks previously entrusted to special units of the U.S. armed forces. Now, that's called soft power and color revolutions. And they manage it all through psychological operations and giving out the propaganda to these people who think they're going to be liberating themselves. Others, however, look beyond simple psychological operations ties to consider other aspects of the body's data processing capability. One of the principal open source researchers on the relationship of information warfare to the body's data processing capability is Russian Dr. Viktor Solontsev of the Bauman Technical Institute in Moscow. Solontsev is a young, well-intentioned researcher striving to point out to the world the potential dangers of the computer operator interface. Supported by a network of institutes and academies, Solontsev has produced some interesting concepts. He insists that man must be viewed as an open system instead of simply an organism or closed system. As an open system, man communicates with his environment through information flows and communications media. One's physical environment through electromagnetic, gravitational, acoustic, or other effects can cause a change in the psychophysiological condition of an organism. So he's talking about the physical changes it can cause in you too. Understand that. In Solontsev's opinion, it says, change of this sort could directly affect the mental state and consciousness of a computer operator. This would not be electronic war or information warfare in the traditional sense, but rather in a non-traditional and non-US sense. It might encompass, for example, a computer modified to become a weapon by using its energy output to emit acoustics that debilitate the operator. It might also encompass, as indicated below, futuristic weapons aimed against man's open system. You see, the mind has no firewall. Back with more after this break.
You forget that I had you in charge when you were a very sick man, when you raved in delirium. And I heard you talk about a hidden room. Now, where else could you put a hidden room except in that mansion you built? That white elephant you call the Oaks. Look, everyone knows I have a bad heart. Now, who would doubt it if you wired the bank directors that my heart had failed?
Hi, folks, we're back, cutting through the matrix and basically reading a very interesting article from the U.S. Army War College, remembering, too, that if you understand how you're reading it, they're seeing a lot more, because most folk don't realize that this is not classified as top secret, obviously, but they do know that the ones who wrote it, that the public would read it, but they wouldn't understand it, and they wouldn't retain it if they did read it. But anyway, because these weapons have been used on you for a long time, that's why I'm saying that. But anyway, it says here, Solontsev also examined the problem of information noise. Now, information noise, in the sense they're talking about here, is like microwave for cell phones. All kinds of data, information delivery systems basically give out data. And you might just get warm with it or whatever, or get ringing in the ears, but it's all data. They call it data. So the problem is information noise, which creates a dense shield between a person and external reality. This noise may manifest itself in the form of signals, messages, images, or other items of information. The main target of this noise would be the consciousness of a person or a group of people. Behavior modification could be one objective of information noise. Another could be to upset an individual's mental capacity to such an extent as to prevent reaction to any stimulus. It'd make you like a zombie. So Solontsev concludes that all levels of a person's psyche, which are subconscious, conscious, and superconscious, are potential targets for destabilization. According to Solontsev, one computer virus capable of affecting a person's psyche is Russian virus 666. Very telling. They love these little numbers, don't they? It manifests itself in every 25th frame of a visual display where it produces a combination of colors that allegedly put computer operators into a trance. The subconscious perception of the new pattern eventually results in arrhythmia of the heart, as I was telling you earlier. The Pentagon's got it too. Other Russian computer specialists, not just Solzhev, talk openly about this 25th frame effect and its ability to subtly manage a computer user's perceptions. The purpose of this technique is to inject a thought into the viewer's subconscious. It may remind some of the subliminal advertising controversy in the US in the late 1950s. They were way back with all this stuff, trying to own the public. How the US views these wonder weapons, altering the data processing ability of the body. What technologies have been examined by the US that possess the potential to disrupt the data processing capabilities of the human organism? The 7th of July, 97 issue of US News and World Report described several of them designed, amongst other things, to vibrate the insides of humans, stun or nauseate them, put them to sleep, heat them up, or knock them down with a shockwave. The technologies include dazzling lasers that can force the pupils to close, acoustic or sonic frequencies that cause the hair cells in the inner ear to vibrate and cause motion sickness, vertigo, and nausea, or frequencies that resonate internal organs causing pain and spasms and shock waves with the potential to knock down humans or airplanes, which can be mixed with pepper spray or chemicals. So the ones that use, that can actually cause the heart to stop, by the way, and it can also cause motion sickness or intense nausea, were demonstrated by Dr. Nick Bagage on Canadian television, Wendy Mesley, who was the host. And he said, he claimed that he got all these ones from the 1950s with the size of a TV remote control gizmo or a modern cell phone, even some of them. They were using them from the 1950s and high levels, very high levels of CIA. Very old stuff. That's what I was telling you. Whatever you think is new or the latest, it's actually antique. They've had it long ago. That's why they let you know about it now. And it says, anyway, it says, with modification, these technological applications have many uses. Acoustic weapons, for instance, could be adopted for use as acoustic rifles or as acoustic fields that, once established, might protect facilities, assist in hostage rescues, control riots, and we've got all those gadgets have rolled out since 2001 to control riots, or clear paths for convoys. These waves, which can penetrate buildings, offer a host of opportunities for military and law enforcement officials. Microwave weapons, by stimulating the peripheral nervous system, can heat up the body, induce epileptic-like seizures, or cause cardiac arrests. That's what they've got planned for you if you ever go on riot. Low-frequency radiation affects the electrical activity of the brain and can cause flu-like symptoms and nausea. And how many folk complain of that? Remember, Brzezinski was talking about using these things continent-wide to keep the people pacified back in the 70s. So other projects sought to induce or prevent sleep or to affect the signal from the motor cortex portion of the brain, overriding voluntary muscle movements. The latter are referred to as pulse wave weapons, and the Russian government has reportedly bought over 100,000 copies of the Black Widow version of them. However, this view of wonder weapons was contested by someone who should understand them, Brigadier General Larry Dodgen, Deputy Assistant to the Secretary of Defense for Policy and Missions, wrote a letter to the editor about the numerous inaccuracies in the U.S. News and World Report article that misrepresented the Department of Defense's views. Dodgen's primary complaint seemed to have been that the magazine misinterpreted the use of these technologies and their value to the armed forces. Well, that's how they play it down when it leaks out, you see. They always play it down. He also underscored the U.S. intent to work within the scope of any international treaty concerning their application, as well as plans to abandon or at least redesign any weapon for which countermeasures are known. One is left with the feeling, however, that research in this area is intense. They're not toning it down, they're intensifying it. A concern not mentioned by Dodgen is that other countries or non-state actors may not be bound by the same constraints. It's hard to imagine someone with a greater desire than terrorists to get their hands on these technologies. Well, sure, your government wants it first, right? Psychoterrorism could be the next buzzword. and the Russian views on psychotronic war. The term psychoterrorism was coined by Russian writer N. Anisimov of the Moscow Anti-Psychotronic Center. According to Anisimov, psychotronic weapons are those that act to take away a part of the information which is stored in a man's brain. It's sent to a computer which reworks it to the level needed for those who need to control the man, and the modified information is then reinserted into the brain. You understand what you're doing? This is old stuff, by the way, which was used back in the 60s. They can actually pick up brainwaves from you at a distance, wirelessly. And they can actually inject new signals so that your original thoughts are completely altered. And then they're controlling you. These weapons are used against the mind to induce hallucinations, sickness, and mutations in human cells, zombification, or even death. That's why you end up with so many tumors now with the brain, mutations in human cells, or even death. Included in the arsenal are VHF generators, and that's in that CNN link I'll put up again tonight from the 1980s, where they show you some of these gadgets. X-rays, it's wonderful, you get X-rays used on you too, which we know they are doing now, aren't they, with the vans that go by in the streets and X-ray you, just like they do at the airports. Ultrasound and radio waves. Russian Army Major I. Chernyshev, writing in the military journal Orienteer in February 97, asserted that psi weapons are under development all over the globe. All over the globe. Specific types of weapons noted by Chernyshev, not all of which have prototypes, were a psychotronic generator which produces a powerful electromagnetic emanation capable of being sent through the telephone lines. Isn't that wonderful, eh? The phone rings, you pick it up, and you end up being a zombie. TV, radio networks, supply pipes, and incandescent lamps. Well, that's your new lovely lamps have got. You know, it's the field around those lamps. Those wonderful, current-saving lamps. They made it law that you must use. An autonomous generator, a device that operates in the 10 to 150 hertz band, which is at the 10 to 20 hertz band, forms an infrasonic oscillation that is destructive to all living creatures. A nervous system generator designed to paralyze the central nervous system of insects, which could have the same applicability to humans. Isn't that wonderful? You're just an insect now. Ultrasound emanations, which one institute claims to have developed. Devices using ultrasound emanations are supposedly capable of carrying out bloodless internal operations without leaving a mark on the skin. They can also, according to Chernyshev, be used to kill. Noiseless cassettes. Chernyshev claims that the Japanese have developed the ability to place infra-low frequency voice patterns over music, patterns that are detected by the subconscious. Russians claim to be using similar bombardments with computer programming to treat alcoholism or smoking. The 25th frame effect also alluded to above, a technique which wherein each 25th frame of a movie reel or film footage contains a message that's picked up by the subconscious. This technique, if it works, could possibly be used to curb smoking and alcoholism. Well, that's doing it for that, isn't it? But has wider, more sinister applications if used on a TV audience or a computer operator. Psychotropics, defined as medical preparations used to induce a trance, euphoria, or depression. Referred to as slow-acting mines, they could be slipped into the food of a politician or into the water supply of an entire city. Symptoms include headaches, noise, voice or commands in the brain, dizziness, pain in abdominal cavities, cardiac arrhythmia, or even destruction of the cardiovascular system. There's confirmation from US researchers that this type of study is going on. Dr. Janet Morris, co-author of The Warrior's Edge, reportedly went to the Moscow Institute of Psychocorrelations in 1991. There she was shown a technique pioneered by Russian Department of Psychocorrection at Moscow Medical Academy, in which researchers electronically analyze the human mind in order to influence it. They input subliminal command messages using keywords transmitted in white noise or music. Using an infrasound, very low frequency transmission, the acoustic psychocorrelation message is transmitted via bone conduction. And they can do that to voice to skull, of course. In summary, Chernyshev noticed that some of the military significant aspects of the psi weaponry deserve closer research, including the following non-traditional methods for disrupting the psyche of an individual. ESP research, determining the properties and condition of objects without ever making contact with them and reading people's thoughts. Clairvoyance research, observing objects that are located just beyond the world of the visible, used for intelligence purposes, but they use technology to do it. Telepathy research, transmitting thoughts over a distance used for covert operations. Telekinesis research, this is what they were doing in Russia at the time, actions involving the manipulation of physical objects through thought power, causing them to move or break apart, used against command and control systems or to disrupt the functioning of weapons of mass destruction. Psychokinesis research, interfering with the thoughts of individuals on either strategic or tactical level. So it's all done technologically, understand. While many US scientists undoubtedly question this research, it receives strong support in Moscow. The point to underscore is that individuals in Russia and other countries as well believe these means can be used to attack or steal from the data processing unit of a human body. Solsev's research mentioned above differs slightly from that of Chernyshev. For example, Solsev is more interested in hardware capabilities, specifically the study of information energy source associated with the computer operator interface. He stresses that if these energy sources can be captured and integrated into the modern computer, the result will be a network worth more than a simple sum of its components. Other researchers are studying high-frequency generators, those designed to stun the psyche with high-frequency waves such as electromagnetic and acoustic and gravitational. The manipulation or reconstruction of someone's thinking through planned measures such as reflexive control processes, that's where they bounce back your own thoughts to yourself, but alter them. The use of psychotronics and so on, or anti-ESP training. The last item is of particular interest. According to Russians, a TV broadcast, the strategic rocket forces have begun anti-ESP training to ensure that no outside force can take over command and control functions of the force. That is, they're trying to construct a firewall around the heads of the operators. At the end of July 1997, planners for Joint Warrior Interoperability Demonstration 97 focused on technology that enhanced real-time collaborative planning in a multinational task force of the type used in Bosnia and in Operation Desert Storm. I hope you realize that they actually used the HARP technologies in Desert Storm, the first one, and you saw these stunned troops coming out. Their minds were gone. They were blank. They were sort of wandering around, bumping into each other. They called them giving up. But no, they weren't giving up. They were out of it. And that was reported in the British newspapers, by the way. JWID 97 network, called the Coalition-Wide Area Network, is the first military network that allows allied nations to participate as full and equal partners. The demonstration, in effect, was a trade fair for private companies to demonstrate their goods. Defense ministries got to decide where and how to spend their money wiser, in many cases without incurring the cost of prototypes. It's a good example of doing business better with less. Technologies demonstrated included soldiers using laptop computers to drag crosshairs over maps to call in airstrikes, soldiers carrying beepers and mobile phones rather than guns, generals tracking movements of every unit, counting the precise number of shells fired around the globe, and inspecting real-time damage inflicted on an enemy, all with multicolored graphics. Every account of this exercise emphasized the ability of systems to process data and provide information feedback via the power invested in their microprocessors. The ability to affect or defend the data processing capability of the human operators of these systems was never mentioned during the exercise. It has received only slight attention during countless exercises over the past several years. The time has come to ask why we appear to be ignoring the operators of our systems. It's because they're 10 a penny. Clearly, the operator exposed before a vast array of potentially immobilizing weapons is the weak spot in any nation's military assets. There are few international agreements protecting the individual soldier, and these rely on the goodwill of the combatants. Some nations and terrorists of every stripe don't care about such agreements, and the US is one of them. This article has used the term data processing to demonstrate its importance to ascertaining what so-called information warfare and information operators or operations are all about. Data processing is the action this nation and others need to protect. Information is nothing more than the output of this activity. As a result, the emphasis on information-related warfare terminology, called information dominance, information carousel is another name for it, that has proliferated for a decade, does not seem to fit the situation before us. In some cases, the battle to affect or protect data processing elements pits one mechanical system against another. In other cases, mechanical systems may be confronted by the human organism or vice versa, since humans can usually shut down any mechanical system with the flip of a switch. In reality, the game is about protecting or affecting signals, waves, and impulses that can influence the data processing elements of our systems, computers, or people. Influence our people. I like that part. We are potentially the biggest victims of information warfare because we have neglected to protect ourselves. No, we've been given no opportunity. And how can you against these evil guys at the top, like the one that wrote this article, who's involved in knocking you all out if need be with this type of technology? Back with more after this break.
Put him up, man. Bright idea to kill me in my own lab and let people think that I'm the bat. But you had to kill me first. What was it to be, ambush?
Hi, folks. We're back, cutting through the matrix. And that was from the U.S. Army War College. And it's called The Mind Has No Firewall. And they've made sure of that. And they certainly have made sure of that. And when they're talking about enemies, you've got to understand what the government perceives as its potential enemy. Now, there's callers on the line there. I'll try and get maybe one in. I'll try George from Philadelphia, if he's there. Is George there?
Yes, Mr. Watt, how do you do today?
Not too bad.
Not too bad is better than not too good.
Well, you can never be too good. It's just you never reach that stage anymore.
This is true. And might I say I'm honored that you have me on this evening. I had a few things I wanted to go over with you. But where to start? I don't want to take up too much of your time, as I'm sure there are many others waiting to speak with you.
Yeah, we've only got a couple of minutes left anyway.
You know. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, well, I guess I'll start. You see, growing up, I grew up on a rich diet of science fiction, whether it had been comic books, television series, and what have you, and I consider myself fortunate in that when I had graduated high school in 1998, just prior to the dependency we all now seem to have on computers and the internet and the iPhones and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the two science fiction modern, well, Doctor Who, for instance, uh-huh. Which is, they have a modern version and the classical version. And one of their villains is a race of creatures they call the Cybermen.
Mm-hmm.
And the qualities of these creatures are, they were once human beings such as you and I.
Yeah.
And what they do is they decided emotions were getting in their way. So what they do is they go across the universe, basically. They kidnap humans, remove the brain, put it into a cybernetic body, and remove the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are in part of a hive mind.
And the same as the Borg on the Star Trek series. Yeah.
And the Phalanx and the X-Men and the Dire Wraiths and the Marvel comics and the Autons and the classic Doctor Who.
Yeah.
This hive-minded villain seems to be a constant in science fiction.
Yeah.
And I am very grateful to my high school teacher, Mrs. Hack, who forced me to read Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. I doubt it's even on the high school reading lists anymore.
No, it's not.
Oh, really? I'm not surprised. You know, even analogies aren't even on the SATs anymore in the United States.
Yeah.
So people have no way of even associating one topic with another.
Never to even guess that Huxley attended world meetings long before he wrote the book and Brave New World. And he goes through it in Brave New World Revisited as to the fact that all that stuff they talked about wasn't just possible, it was very probable.
Yeah, and I'm seeing that. And I saw it then, too, back when I was 17 and 18, albeit I was not quite able to express it in the way that I am now. And listening to you, I've been listening to you for the past several months, and you kind of put the words in, put to words that which I was aware of.
Yeah, yeah. But that's it. That's the whole thing, is connecting it all together and showing you there's not really no such thing as just fiction, because psychological operations have been going on for over 140 years in the sci-fi venue. Yeah, it's predictive programming. It's predictive programming.
I walk around my...
I've got to go now. That's the music, though. But thanks for calling in, George. It's predictive programming, and they get you used to things to come, and you just accept it because it's already in your mind. From Hamish, myself, from Interior Canada, it's good night to me, your God, your God's goal with you.